Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over! 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
Welcome back to Thompson to Clark. Brad is back from vacation. How was Vegas?
It was very Vegas-y. It was 100 degrees in October, yep. Which gave you, plenty of time at the pool, which was really nice. But it was fun. We caught our first, my wife and I have been to professional NHL hockey games before, but it was a first for the youngest. So the three of us grabbed some tickets for opening night, KNIGHT, because we saw the Vegas Golden Knights.
Did they win?
T-Mobile Arena. They did. They won 8-4. They scored 8 goals. So a heck of a game to get, the kid to her first game ever. She loved it. I mean, she was having a blast. And so we did that, and we went to a Conan Gray concert. Conan Gray is a pop artist. That was interesting. The venue was in the Cosmopolitan, a place called the Chelsea Theater. Now, it has a kind of, I think, a breakaway floor where they open it up and they bring chairs up from underneath and this and that. So the section we were at was, general admission, so no seats. Well, you could tell it was a breakaway floor because when everybody started jumping, the whole thing was bouncing up and down. You're like you were on a gigantic sponge. But that was a great concert. We did that. Just kind of tooled around. We went to Sinatra, one of our favorite restaurants. In the Encore, the Wynn Encore. We try to do that every time we're there. Pricey, but Sinatra themed. I'm singing along with every song under my breath because it's a classy joint. I don't want to scare anybody. But it was great. Drive down there, 7.5-8 hours. Drive back, 7.5 hours. We keep talking about one of these years. We're just going to fly down there. And then as we get closer, we look at prices. And we're like, even though it's interstate and you're flying Southwest, you're going from Reno to Vegas, it's still pricey. I mean, the cheapest we got, we ended up flying down my oldest because she's at UNR and they don't have fall break. So we were on fall break with the young one. So she had to wait for classes to be over. And so she flew out Thursday morning. And even that, the cheapest we can get was like $98 to get her down there. And then she drove back with us in the car. But you think about it, both ways, that's $200 a person. You got four people. Now you're looking at, $800 and fees and all that. You're close to $1,000 just to fly to Vegas and back. So adds quite a bit.
We went to Arizona to celebrate my parents' 50th. I don't know why, but it was between $400 and $500 both ways per ticket per person.
Wow.
So there was something going on in Arizona.
Wow.
We were only there for less than 48 hours on 36 hours or so. So driving takes 11 hours. You can't really do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you mentioned the Golden Knights and, we have this network. It's Bay Area Sports. I would love to find someone who wants to talk San Jose Sharks. It would be a lot of fun. The Sharks have a new player. He was the first pick of the NHL draft. He is 18 years old. His name is Macklin Celebrini. His dad is, is he the trainer or the strength and conditioning coach? Or he has something to do with the Warriors and, helping the players stay on the floor, essentially. So we've kind of tangentially known about Macklin for a little bit. And for the Sharks to get Macklin is actually really cool. So I was kind of paying attention a little bit more. And, I thought, it's time. I haven't been to a Sharks game in over 5 years, probably. So I officially gave them the curse. because they were winning on opening night. I think you're up 4-1 in the third period. And so I turned it on right at the beginning of the third period, and they went on to give up 3 goals. Game was tied, OT, and then they lost in OT. And I was like, of course. All the 20 minutes or 20 odd minutes that I saw of hockey, the Sharks gave up 4 goals and scored 0 and lost a game. So I don't know. I may not. The next time I may just check my phone instead of turn it on. I feel like,
I mean, nowadays NHL games, I mean, back when we were kids, NHL games were, you know, you got a 2-1 or 3-1 game, whatever, you know, maybe you got 4 goals. Nowadays, to get 6 or 7 goals in a game because of the rule changes and bigger, stronger, faster players, man, it is a high-scoring game. I mean, so many games last year and 2 years ago when Vegas, you know, won the Cup. During the season, they had quite a few games where they were, you know, like you said, a 5-1, and all of a sudden it's 5-4. And you're like, oh, no. And then they score again. And they go, oh, 6-4. We got a cushion with 5 minutes left. Now it's tied 6-6. And you're like, what is going on? So you can't – it's hard to, like, walk away from the screen when the action is happening. So, I mean, for us being there live, it was extremely exciting. The vantage point we had, we were in the second deck in a T-Mobile Arena in Vegas. The second deck is like a 34-degree incline or decline, should I say, because you're looking down 34 degrees. So the person in front of you, their head is at your shin. So that's how high up you are from the next person and how quickly it goes down. But you're looking straight down at the ice pretty much, and you're seeing plays open, and you're seeing, you know, a guy wide open in the middle, and, you know, pass to him, you could, you know, one timer, he could possibly score. So it was really exciting. It was a lot of fun. I would absolutely go again. We're looking at, you know, tickets to see the Golden Knights play possibly down in San Jose. But the only problem is the 2 times they play there this year is 2 days after Christmas.
Oh.
And then like 2 weeks later in January. So planning now to go over the pass in December or January, you can't really do it because you have no idea, is the pass going to be closed the day you need to travel?
Yeah.
You know, what's it going to be like? So we might look closer as we get like a week out. Oh, weather's going to be great. Maybe we'll grab some tickets then. And in Tahoe, South Tahoe, the Vegas Golden Knights have a minor league affiliate down there that starts play in about a week called the Tahoe Night Monsters.
Wow.
And that name came from the, you know, the rumor and the stories and the lore that there is a Tahoe Tessie. We have our own Loch Ness monster in Lake Tahoe, which, you know, nobody's ever seen, but, so the Tahoe Night Monsters and where they play, some tickets are like $20. So Denise and I and the kid are going to try to, you know, hop down there whenever we can and catch some Tahoe Night Monster games. That should be kind of fun because right in the middle of, I mean, it's right next to Bally's, if you're familiar with South Tahoe. So you got Bally's, and then you got across the street, you got Harrah's and Harvey's, like right there. So it's in the middle and in the thick of things, easy to get to. Bally's always has next door $60 room rates per night. So, you know, you're not breaking the bank by going to one of those games. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to mention, we will get to some Giants talk here in a second. There's some Buster Posey fallout here that I wanted to ask you about. Article by Susan Slusser today in the Chronicle that I opened up some eyes and maybe had some people shake their heads a little bit about the Giants process and who they're going to find to help out Buster here. I have another channel, another podcast network, and another YouTube channel. And there we talk about boxing and UFC/MMA. It's not all the time, but every once and again, and, you know, probably more along the lines of monthly. And I'm going to start simulcasting the MMA and boxing talk onto this channel, because this channel is very sports oriented. And I think it kind of fits just based off of some of the chats that we have in the Discord. So it's not going to be just Bay Area specific boxing or MMA talk. That would be a very short podcast, by the way. But we are going to start simulcasting to this channel. So If you like MMA, if you like boxing, definitely you'll see some content probably at least starting once a month. And if you don't, you know, just delete them, skip them. If you only want to listen to Giants and maybe Niners, skip them, you know, delete them. It is mostly there, at least for me, to see if we can kind of market those in two different areas, because I know the people who follow the Fight Game channel may not also be following the BSPN channel and vice versa. So I just want to make sure that, you know, the possibility of as many eyeballs and ears are there. So we'll do that. I may not do it that long. I may see that nobody wants to listen to that stuff on BSPN, and we'll keep it on Fight Game, but it kind of a little bit of an experiment that we're going to start this weekend. We're going to talk boxing with my buddy Carlos Toro, and then on the UFC side, more along the way of like UFC previews for big shows, will be my buddy Paul Fontaine. So keep your eyes open and your ears open for those shows, probably coming this weekend with the boxing one. All right,
you got to keep it going at least until the Tyson match.
Yes,
right? I mean, that's exciting. Now they're starting to pump it on Netflix, so I might watch that. I think I'm around for that. So
yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. I'm more interested in how Netflix carries the fight than the actual fight in of itself, for sure. Because Mike Tyson is 58 years old.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be a red carpet. I'm sure there's going to be, guys, it's a celeb show, man. There's going to be lots of celebs there. So.
All right, let's talk about this Buster Posey fallout. So Jarrett Seidler was on last week when you were out, and we were talking about this role as being, you know, the GM to Buster Posey's president of baseball ops. And he comes from a very analytical world, obviously, right? Where he writes is very analytical.
Right.
And that world is kind of confused about what the Giants are doing. And like I mentioned, Susan Slusser had an article in the Chronicle today, which talked about who the Giants may be talking to bring in to join Posey. Now, there were some caveats in who the Giants are looking for. Posey already mentioned heavy scouting background. But in reading the piece, there's also a public-facing part of the job. So Buster, being the lovable Giants celebrity, it doesn't sound like he also wants to be the guy answering questions on you know, how often Farhan was available for press. You know, I don't know how often that really was. It seemed like there were moments where he was there a lot and then moments where he wasn't. But Buster doesn't want to be that person. So it's almost like the Giants are hiring a sort of a liaison. And the other part about it is we talked about this, which is the Giants currently have an assistant who may be the one doing all of like the contract stuff and the paperwork and really understanding the cap and all of that stuff. So this person who they're hiring to kind of be Buster Posey's right hand, it just seems like the Giants are going super duper old school after coming out from the Bochy era of leaning heavily into the new school. Now, I don't know that I disliked them leaning into the new school. Like we had talked about it as kind of being a little bit more of a refreshing thing. We're kind of up with the times. And this way that they're doing it almost seems like an overcorrection. Like, you know, Farhan was this specific way, so we have to overcorrect on the other side. Farhan was unlikable to most of the Giants fan base. We got to go all the way to the other side. So what do you think about this idea that it's like Buster and someone who's heavily into scouting, which means also that they're not even talking to someone like Kim Ng, would she even want to be? She doesn't want this job. She probably wants her own job. This doesn't feel like a sexy job, you know, your own sort of independent job to jumpstart your career here or to keep, you know, keep the hot prospect of baseball ops people and to put them in the right position. This seems more like not necessarily grunt work, but also not a job in which you're going to be the one who is seen favorably. You're probably going to be the one who gets blamed a little bit more. So What did you think about when you heard who they were talking to and kind of how they were putting this thing back together?
I mean, you've talked about this before. This is going from, you know, back in the day, Brian Sabin, we were Wild Thing, and now we went to corporate Wild Thing with Farhan, and it's the end of, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Major League 2, it's the end of Major League 2 where he rips off the sleeves and he comes out of the bullpen, and we're back to Wild Thing. And I'm fine with that. I like it, and kind of knew. I mean, the day they hired Buster Posey and appointed him, we kind of knew, look, hey, Buster's not going to be negotiating contracts. Buster's not going to be doing interviews. He's not going to be the face of this. He's going to be the direction of this. He is the captain underneath the deck that you don't see that's actually steering the ship. Not the guy out on top of the ship, you know, in the Jack Sparrow outfit. That's going to be whoever they hire. I like Billy Owens. I think that's a good pick. I know we're going to talk about some of these a little bit more, but, you know, the fact that they've asked to interview Billy Owens, and it kind of sounds like they might have already. I think it's a great move to go to the GM. I mean, look, you and I are old guys. We grew up with that. The GM is the guy that is the face of the organization in terms of who he hires. Then he's going to talk about it. Then he's going to be at the presser to answer questions. Things aren't going well halfway through the season and they have to start making moves. He's the guy, she's the person that you're going to talk to. And so I'm good with that. I'm good with going a little bit, I wouldn't even say backwards. I would just say going, you know, old school, kind of the way it should be in terms of a GM. It was always weird for me with Scott Harris and Pete Petilla that they were actually our GMs, but I don't remember more than a soundbite from either one of them over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. So yeah, I mean, it's the plan. It's how it was going to work. And I like it. I dig it, man.
So my worry, and this is a worry with a lot of things, which is, I mean, the idea should be when you have to make some pretty high level decisions, is you should have lots of smart people around you to give you tons of different differentiating feedback from different ways to look at things, different ways of life. It is why inclusivity is very important in decision making, is so you can get different perspectives. This feels way too much to me like we do baseball one way, and if you don't fit this template, then we don't want you, which I think is probably the wrong way to go. And I may be trying to define this thing a little bit too specifically, but Buster, obviously we know the type of baseball that Buster plays. Smart, hard-nosed, the Giants way, whatever, however you want to define that. And if you bring in somebody, because there's been talk about, you know, you mentioned Billy Owens, they've talked about somehow getting Bobby Evans back in the door, somehow getting Brian Sabian, if he wants to be in some sort of advisor role. So that sounds to me a lot like Buster and friends versus folks who will be able to challenge Buster on decision making. And that's where I get a little worried, because when you are very new in the role, you want to have all kinds of influences so you understand kind of what you're fitted. Where do you go with stuff like this? You're hearing things from a couple different directions. Now, I'm sure the Giants have some analytics folks already in the system who can give him some information. But who's going to have information that he's actually going to listen to? Who's going to give him information with some teeth who he's like, huh, that's really sound. I need to think about that. Because if that person who is giving him information hasn't been in the trenches with him, I'm a little worried that their information may not be listened to. But again, this is Buster's deal. He's got to figure that whole thing out. The way that they're going about this, though, does give me a little fear of, we you know, I want to I want people around me who are going to give me things that I like hearing or I want to hear.
Well, here's the thing. And I mean, the honest truth is we don't know a whole lot about Business Buster yet. I mean, you know, he's been an owner for not too long, moved back to the Bay Area, now has this role. I could see him, you know, again, as a catcher. He wasn't there calling the shots. It was a collective. It was always a collective of how are we going to pitch this guy, you know, or how are we going to pitch this lineup in the World Series. It was a collective between him and the pitching staff. So he's used to working with staffs along with Dave Rigetti and you know, all the other guys, taking feedback, taking information, using that information and piecing it together and then coming up with his own plan. So I think if you had people, advisors like, Bobby Evans and Sabian, if you had them in there, I think Buster's going to lean on them more than they're going to, you know, sit there and say, well, Buster, what do you want? Let's go ahead and do it. I mean, that would be an advisor role to help him out to say, look, you know, this is the type of talent that we want to build in this ball club. This is what we want to do. And maybe Sabian steps in and says, don't forget, we need this type of player also to round out the lineup, you know, whatnot. Again, not that finite, but, you know, and I think the other thing too is this team for so long has lacked talent in terms of just raw talent. We don't have the Fernando Tatises or the Juan Sotos or the Stephen Kwans. We don't have any of those guys. I mean, Elliot Ramos, and we've gone out and you know, signed Chapman and you know, signed Jung-Hoo Lee. But in terms of drafting and developing, and I think, again, if they go that way for the GM because they have a scouting background, I think that's going to help with the trades, with the drafting, with, you know, free agency pickups, with, you know, minor league deals, with different things happening. It just feels like this team has lacked that for so long that I think if you have somebody like Buster at the top, who again, I mean, who would beat it to death, but he knows how to win. We've seen it on the field. We've seen it with him managing pitching staff. So if he can put a team together that not won't just follow what he listens to, but will be a collective, you know, in the room together to bounce ideas off of, he knows the ultimate goal, and the ultimate goal is to win and to, you know, to build the fan base back up and to build memories. I mean, he said it himself. How do you build memories with great players and great teams? So that's what he wants. And I think, you know, most GMs and most talent people want that. Will they eventually maybe talk to Kim Ng? Maybe she's not, like you said, maybe she's not even interested because she came from a boss position.
She would want Buster's job. She doesn't want the liaison to Buster.
Exactly. So, yeah, she would not want – I mean, again, I don't know 100%. Maybe she does to build back into the system and say, look, you know, look what we're doing here in San Francisco. Now, eventually, Cashman's gone. I could take over the Yankees job. You know, something, you know, yeah, like the big, you know, some of the big stuff out there. You know, we might be a stepping stone for a person like Kim Ng. I don't know. But again, she could also probably get one of those jobs right now as it is. So why even bother talking to her if she's waiting in the wings for something big to come along? But yeah, I think I'm... I'm tired of the analytics. I'm tired of the number crunching. I'm tired of the dead fish in the front office. So to get, you know, talent people in there, actual GM, actual personalities and people who want to win, who don't want to just like, I'm going to see what I can do with on base percentage. I'm going to see what I could do with this guy who strikes out as much as he walks. Again, it's not sexy. It's gotten old. I want to see what you know, what true GMs can do with a Buster Posey brain trust kind of leading the way.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for
in Dax's domain. We see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them.
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
If I can explain Farhan's goals, I think I would explain it as shoot for 500 by winning or losing games on the fringes and trying to have even the smallest of advantages. And because of the luck involved in baseball and injuries and bad luck as well,
right?
You know, you are if you are plus or minus five games, you know, at the 500 mark, plus or minus, then you're probably in decent shape. Now, Buster, if I can sort of understand his mentality, may be more like, you know, boom or bust in a sense, because, you know, if you're going for it and you're not really worried about some, you know, talent wise, right? Like, if Farhan couldn't bring in the talent, he was going to grab like four or five guys who may be able to do bits and pieces of what one big player could do. And I don't know. We don't know how Buster's going to look at stuff like that. But I do think the reason why the Giants were pretty close to 500 every year was because Farhan cared about those little tiny little details of, and was working the phones on players that, you know, 20 years ago, no one would really care about. Like 20 years ago, the Giants would not have invested in a Lamont Wade because they would have seen someone who was just injury prone with no power, where Farhan saw somebody who could actually get on base. Right. So the one thing that it reminded me of now that we've had a couple weeks now. So the Warriors brought in Chris Mullin to be the general manager of their team. Chris Mullin, not quite the Warriors legend that Buster Posey is to the Giants, but still a very popular player. When you bring in a Chris Mullin, you're bringing in some fanfare with Chris Mullin because of the memories that you had with him. Now, Chris Mullin was putting together his team, and what he realized is that they needed a savvier head coach, and he brings in his old coach, Don Nelson. And Don Nelson comes in, and in 2006, they make some trades. They make some pretty savvy moves that could have been like boom or bust type of moves that maybe we're thinking Posey might make. And you had the Warriors making the playoffs as the eighth seed. And then they upset the Dallas Mavericks, number one seed, the first time that had ever happened in a seven-game series, first round seven-game series, I believe. I think it happened before in a five-game series. And the Warriors, the We Believe Warriors are born. And it was sort of like a two-year stopgap where they were competing again, and then they went all to hell until Steph Curry came along. But the most memorable part of that Chris Mullin thing is that by bringing in Don Nelson, what he actually brought in is a guy who hustled him out of his own job, because Don Nelson, you being savvy, he basically took Chris's job and was like, I'll just do both jobs. We don't need Chris, and kind of backstabbed him out the door. So that doesn't quite happen in baseball. There's too many, there's too many layers of people there.
Too many layers and too many jobs and too many people that know each other. So yes.
But Chris Mullin's moves were based, I'm sure, a lot of based on what he thought he would see on the court. Trading for Baron Davis, which worked for the 2 years that Baron Davis was there, but then they couldn't sign him, which was probably for the benefit because Baron Davis fizzled out soon thereafter. Trading for guys like Steven Jackson, who finagled the Warriors owner into crazy money and then immediately asked to be traded. They had a roster that worked for that team, but was not going to last and was not actually a building block. What it turned out to be was this like mismatch of players who gelled for one season, and then the next year everyone was like, oh, what about mine? What about mine? Nope, it didn't work. And then they were terrible again. So that is kind of what I compare this Buster thing to, is he's going to use a lot of what he sees on the field, a lot of the players that he played with whom he liked and he didn't like, he may believe in, and we'll talk about this in a second, he may believe in a Willie Adames who strikes out 175 times but can hit 25 bombs. Over
33. Hit 33 this year.
Over a Haesung Kim who is more Farhan-y, I believe, than an Adames is. So that is kind of that is what I'm seeing. And look, we are, the benefit of us doing a weekly podcast about the Giants is we're going to be able to cover the week by week of it. We'll be able to celebrate the things that Buster does well. And, you know, and we'll be critical of the things that he doesn't do well. I think we were pretty fair with Farhan this year and, you know, over the years. And, you know, I've had my frustrations with him and some of the things that he says. But when you kind of pull back and you take that big picture look, you know, he had his positives as well as his negatives. And like I said, you know, the Giants talent wise may have been an under 500 team, but he was able to get them to close to a 500 team because of those things. So, you know, for us, we want to see World Series. We don't care about 500. So that wasn't good enough. But all right, let's talk about some other stuff here. Brian Price, who's the Giants pitching coach, who they kind of brought out of retirement because he was good friends with Bob Melvin. Giants were his hometown team. Last year, he had signed a one-year deal to come back. It was kind of a dream job for him. And today, he said he was not coming back. And do you know who I heard as the possible, you know, I don't know if he's the top option, but a very valuable name, which would fit right in kind of the Buster ethos that we're kind of creating without even knowing. We're just creating this Buster universe here. Brian Vogelsong, I heard, was a top name to be their pitching coach.
Yeah, I think the name was in there as more like on the staff. And I think he's going to lean on Vogelsong for, you know, you know, just kind of bounce some ideas off of him. Like, who do you think? But, you know, I think JP Martinez is one of the names. He's an assistant to Brian Price, came over from Detroit, I think it was. And then a couple other guys. I'd say, you know, it's just one of those things. When Brian Price was hired, I was like, ooh, we're going back old school now, because Brian Price was retired. He's 60 years old. I think they offered him a 2-year deal. He said, no, I want a 1-year deal because I want to see how this goes. I'm just coming out of retirement, doing this in San Francisco, doing it with my buddy, Bob Melvin. You know, he's with him in Seattle and Arizona. So I think he pretty much said, hey, I'm going to give it a year. And then, you know, in the quotes, he said, you know, as you get older, you realize the travel is great when you're trying to cut your teeth, basically, and you're trying to make your name and you're going all over, you know, the country with the team. But when you're this age and you got a family and you're older, it's kind of, you kind of see the value of the family. So I think he wanted to get back to retirement and do a little fishing, which I don't blame him.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's cool, right? Like,
oh yeah,
I'm sure, because Bob Melvin himself didn't sign a long deal.
Right.
And if you're Brian Price, you can't necessarily, you know, think about being there for the long run when you're unsure about the management team. You were unsure about where Farhan stood at the end of last year. So you're kind of coming in going like hoping for the best. And maybe if the Giants did make the playoffs, and maybe if there was the same stability and Farhan was still around, maybe he's like, yeah, I'll stick around for another year. But, you know, there's, you know, as you do get older, a lot of the stuff that he's missed over his career, he probably wants to make sure that he is there for these days. So it was kind of cool, but you know, I'm sure the Giants will be fine, you know, bringing in somebody else. Melvin has many ties to other people. Buster, like we said, has ties, and you know, I'm not, this is not something where I'm like, oh no, the sky is falling, we lost Brian Price. Yeah, right. As respected as he was.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, who's the most famous pitching coach in San Francisco Giants history to you?
It's got to be Rags, right? I mean, he was there for the, you know, for the three championships. I mean, and for the name, it's got to be Dick Pohl, right? I mean, for the name alone, it is Dick Pohl. But I think the most famous has got to be Rags. And the most famous for me in Los Angeles Dodgers history was always when Joey Amalfitano walked out to the mound. I couldn't tell if it was him or Lasorda because they were both large, fat guys. But I was like, which one is that? I can't see. My TV's fuzzy.
All right. Let's move along here. So the Giants have three players who are finalists for Gold Gloves. One is the young catcher, Patrick Bailey. We also have Mike Yastrzemski, baby Yaz in right field, and Matt Chapman at third base. I'm going to guess they get at least one. I would hope.
The front runner for actually the Platinum Glove, which is the best glove. You win the Gold Glove and then you win the Platinum Glove. The front runner for that, from my understanding, everything I read, is Patrick Bailey.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, that would be phenomenal. Chapman's got to get it too, right? Yaz, it's going to be another one of those things where, you know, Yaz is a good right fielder and he's you know, great with the glove and he plays right field and Oracle really, really well. But, you know, there's Fernando Tatis.
Yeah.
Kind of blocking him. So,
yeah. Oh, we're going to talk about Tatis in a second. I was very disappointed in those Padres.
Yeah, and the other one too is Tyro Estrada was well on the road to being a finalist in the National League as a second base Gold Glove, but you know, with the injuries and his bat taking him out of the lineup towards the end of the season, he didn't really have that chance. But man, that guy's worked his tail off to be such a good second baseman. He was leading in, you know, runs saved and all the great categories. Like when you looked in, I think it was like in June, and then he got hurt and everything kind of, you know, took a dump. So that was hard to see, but you know, I was like, man, because I remember watching videos of him working hard in spring training when he got the second base job and, you know, kind of owning his craft. And so that's kind of a bummer, but yeah, I think Chapman gets it, and I think Bailey gets the big kahuna, man, the Platinum Glove.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Especially because he's going to have a catcher who is the baseball ops guy. So that'll look good on the resume with the baseball ops guy.
Yeah, Buster never won the Platinum Glove, right?
okay, we're going to debut a new segment here. Because of free agency, not quite here yet. We have to wait for the season to be over and all that jazz. But from time to time, at least if the segment goes well, we'll pick a couple of players or more and kind of decide who we lean towards and who we would rather have, because the Giants are going to have to spend money. I don't know if they're going to spend as much money as they spent this year, but they're going to have to dive into some of those. So some of that large coffer that they have to bring in players. And, you know, baseball free agency, not necessarily the best way to bring over, you know, a lot of time. Like I was looking at, because we're going to talk about Adames right now, and there are players who are comparable to him who hit free agency recently. And the top few were like Correa, who had a decent year if he could stay healthy.
Sure.
Darby Swanson, who has just become like an average hitter. Javier Baez, who is a below average hitter.
Terribly below average hitter.
And the best one of all of them was Trey Turner. And, yeah, you know, he's decent, you know, good average, good speed, good power. Like he's pretty much your perfect prototypical free agent that you know, what you're paying for is what you get. So maybe I'm just being unoriginal, but I called this segment Who Do You Want? Okay.
Give us all of them.
No, I think as you look at the list of players, and we're going to do this exercise where we kind of look at all of the players who are available, and we did this last year, I think you're going to be disappointed once you get.
Yeah, the list this year. Yeah, the free agents list this year. And we don't know yet because there's going to be some opt out. So we're like, oh, that person opted out. So, but yeah, it's not a hot list like it was last year.
Rap Album Depot said he wants Ray Sanchez and Jose Vizcaíno. He wants us to revisit that.
Oh, good Lord. Nobody wants to revisit that, man. Ray Sanchez.
I like that one. That was good. That was a good callback. Good job. Good job.
I like that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So Willy Adames and Haesung Kim. Now, Kim, we think he's going to be a free agent. We're not 100% sure. There's a mutual option that they have in he has the option, they have the option. So I think how it works is both parties have to say yes, that they want in for it to be exercised. I think Kim hire a new agent. So that usually means when you hire a new agent, I don't know if you necessarily hire a new agent to opt back into your current.
Yeah. Yeah. Your new agent isn't going to say, hey, thanks for bringing me aboard. Let's just keep doing what we're doing.
So that all of that being said, we believe that Adames and Kim are going to be out there and available. Okay. Now the calculus in all of this is that Tyler Fitzgerald and then signing a shortstop would basically fill the two holes up the middle. And Fitzgerald could be their starting shortstop next year. Defensively, I don't think he's strong. I don't even think he's, you know, he's probably serviceable there, but he does not seem like a natural shortstop to me. And we could probably get away with him as a second baseman, but he's athletic. He's fast. He can probably get better. But what we do know is probably not going to be Marco Luciano. They are trying to move him to the outfield. So this exercise, this is not Brad and I saying we have to go get either of these guys.
Right.
We are saying if it is these two guys, this is who we would choose. So I'm going to give you the pros and cons of Willy Adames and Kim, and we'll go with Adames first. So the pros is just the power, which, as we've seen with Jorge Soler, may or may not even translate in Oracle. Who knows? For some reason, there is like a, you know, there's a force out there in left field that just stops home runs from leaving the park for right-handed hitters. But he did average 29 home runs in the last 3 years, and he played a minimum of 139 games at short in the last 3 years. Another pro is his walks were up last year, not up a crazy amount, but he went from like 50 something to 74, and which helps because he's not a high average hitter. He's never been a real high average hitter in the bigs. I think his best year was like a 280 or 285 or something like that. And another pro is he took advantage of the new stolen base rules, and he stole 21 bags last year, which is way up from his previous career high. Now, the negatives, the cons. Defensive metrics were a positive for him all the way until last year. Now, you have Matt Chapman next to you. That helps. So, you know, his defense may be slowing down or just maybe having a bad year. Maybe some of that is fixed by just having a Matt Chapman at third base. Another con is he and Chapman are like the same hitter. You know, middle 200s average, high 20s power. They both can run a little bit, but they're both like your quintessential number six hitter. Can you have both of those guys? You know, can you do a 5-6 or are they both six hitters? Like that is kind of like, you know, the where they would both fit on a bad team. You know, they may be 3-4 hitters, but if you're on a good team, you're probably better with them being a little bit further down in the order. And contract wise, SpotTrack has him market value wise. Now, this doesn't mean what their agent is looking for. This is just kind of like players similar to Adames what they have signed for or what they would sign for. 6 years, $152 million. So that's a lot of cheese for somebody who's like a 248 hitter. Okay. Now for Kim, his pros. Very passable on base percentage for a guy who himself is not a high average hitter. He works counts fairly well. And he also has good speed, averaged 24 stolen bags over the last 3 years. Can play all three infield positions, excluding first base, second, third, short. Last year, won the Gold Glove for the utility. And the cons, season-ending shoulder surgery this year. He could not come back to help the Padres in their playoff run. He doesn't hit for much power. And is probably a bottom of the order hitter. SpotTrack has his market value right now at 4 for $50, which I find to be a little low. I don't know what his market is. It just sounds low for somebody who is looking to opt out and hit free agency. So that's the number that I wasn't quite sure about. So all that being said, you are Buster Posey. Mm-hmm. You want to bring in a shortstop, and these are two of the better ones out there on the market. They're different type of players. They are, you know, one is a power hitter and one is a defensive guy who, if he can get on base, is going to steal some bags, but he is going to be, you are putting him there because he can play good defense. Who do you choose out of those two players?
You know, I'm probably going to have a theme during this, and I think my theme is going to lean towards, is it different? I'll take it. And so I think for me, I'm going to go Willy Adames, because we've seen that, you know, the Nick Ahmed at shortstop got some defense, got a little bit of pop, got some speed. Okay, that's good. But obviously that didn't fly. They wanted to see more pop. They wanted to see more power from that position. That's you know, it's a nowadays shortstop. Yeah. Okay. You could be a decent shortstop, but if you're hitting 33 home runs and driving in 117 runs, we're going to stick you there. And, you know, the article we had read earlier too, talked about, you know, the fact that you got Chapman at third base, who's a Gold Glover, who could help you out. You know, he can make some plays at third, so he can kind of cover up some of your blemishes if you're not the best shortstop defensively in the world. So I'm going to go with Adames on this. Yeah, I mean, he's not going to hit 33 at Oracle. He's probably going to hit, you know, like you said, 25.
I would look at Chapman's numbers and say that probably be a pretty good guess.
For sure. And I know, yeah, the problem is he is the same hitter as Chapman, but that's not a huge problem because that's an upgrade over anything we've had at shortstop over the last few years. So,
yeah, I guess Crawford's 2021 probably withstanding.
Yeah, exactly. And that was an anomaly. It just kind of, you know, came out of nowhere, happened, and then disappeared after that. And before that, he had a good, you know, offensive year or two. This is going to be more like a Rich Aurelia, right? I mean, you're going to get some pop. You're going to get some okay shortstop, and you're going to get some strikeouts. You know, I don't think Rich Aurelia ever struck out more than 90-something times in a season.
175 or something like that.
170. That's a lot of strikeouts, but when you're covering that up with home runs and you're driving in runs and you're getting those key home runs, because that's the other thing too, is the Giants lacked those spots where they had two runners on and one out, and it's like, okay, you got one chance, your one home run hitter is coming up, so you've got a chance to drive in that run. Now if you can make it in your lineup, so you got three or four guys who can hit 20 to 25 home runs, possibly 30 home runs, then you're all of a sudden looking at, okay, now they're kind of feeding off of each other, and you know, you can't quite pitch around this guy to get to this guy because this guy's the same guy, so we're going to pitch to him and see what happens. I think, you know, I think I would go, I, the beginning of the season, I probably would have said Kim. But I think the Kim move would be a more of a kind of a, again, a more of the same, 260 hitter. I'm not, it would be a fan base thing. It would be like, hey, you know, him and Jungkook Lee are best friends. Mm-hmm. So let's get them together. Let's build that fan base. You get more of a Korean fan base. You can stretch into Korea with that. And get some more viewership there, some more Giants fans there. I don't know if that's what the Giants are trying to do right now. That would be a signing if you had a Juan Soto, if you had a Pete Alonso, something like that. I would say, okay, then I could go with. But if you're going right off the bat and shortstop is your number one position, I would probably go Willy Adames.
I like the way you rationalize that. But I agree with actually the thing that you said right before you stopped, which is if you have Kim, it means you're probably spending your money elsewhere on another hitter. Juan Soto, as much as we have been asking for him for the last 3 years of this podcast, it just seems worse and worse that it's not going to happen.
If we can't trade for him, which we haven't the last couple of years, get him in free agency. But I don't think
absolutely. The Pete Alonso thing is interesting, though. If they can actually beat the Dodgers, and we'll talk about that in a bit, you know, maybe there is some pressure to try and bring him back. But I like the player. I like Kim the player better than I like Adames the player from the perspective of like who does the right things on the field. But you have to have more talent around a Kim. My real worry with Adames is just the contract. And again, not our money. 106 years, 152. What is he, 30? Is he 30 right now? 29,
30? Yeah, I'm not sure his age, but I think he's nearing the 30 year. Yeah.
Yeah, so he is currently, he just turned 29. So his baseball year... Yeah, you know, that's not, you know, he'll be 35. He would be 35 by the end of the contract if it was like a 6-year deal. But I just think Kim probably does more things. Now, when it came to war last year, Adames did have a 0.5 war higher than Kim, I believe. So Kim's year was a little stunted with the shoulder injury. So, you know, if you could get a 270, 30 bank, 30 home run guy from Adames, I think it's easy. You automatically take him. But if that kind of disappears a little bit in San Francisco, then I worry about that a little bit. It's just guys like Kim could probably do more things on the field to help a team than Adames could, unless Adames hits home runs. And that's why these right-handed hitters don't come here, is because they know their value decreases if they hit even 3 or 5 home runs less than they do everywhere else. So,
but if it's their last big deal, like Carlos Correa, I mean, he didn't have a problem. He was going to come because of that money. And that was going to be his last big deal. That was going to be it. I mean, he was going to retire a Giant. So if you're going to do that, it's who cares about your value at that point? But you're still, you want to come to a team that's looking to build and win. And I think that's going to be the biggest key this season.
We'll add one more caveat here, is, would you rather spend the big money to bring in someone like an Adames or smaller money to bring in Kim, or would you just roll the dice with Tyler Fitzgerald?
I would rather spend the big money on Willy Adames, but I will tell you this, if somebody comes and gives him way more and he doesn't come to San Francisco, I would not be sad if we got Kim.
So yeah.
I would take either one of those guys and plug Tyler Fitzgerald over at second base.
Me too.
That's what I want to do.
So Rap Album Depot thinks Casey Schmidt should be in the thoughts here. And I mean, we love Casey, but man, I think I could get Casey Schmidt out, you know, just by a mix of certain amount of pitches, the way that he goes up there swinging. Now, if Casey Schmidt, if he can actually learn the strike zone a little bit, I think he's definitely a valuable player. The problem is just that when you have to see a Casey Schmidt a second time, you've got him figured out, because You know, you just can't.
You don't have to throw a strike.
You don't have to throw strikes. And that is the worst type of hitter in today's baseball, especially with how often you're going to see different relievers. You know, it's not like you're going to get the, you know, the old the guy who's just around the plate for seven innings and he, you know, gives up four runs. Like, that baseball is not here anymore. So you're going to get a guy who's throwing dirty for four innings. And then the next two times you come up, you're getting two different guys who throw 100 miles an hour. And Casey Schmitt's, his understanding of the strike zone is not there yet. And he even admitted it. Like, he admitted it at the end of the season. He was like, yeah, you know, I'm sure, you know, people think they can get me out or whatever he said. So
he said, you may look at me and think I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah,
like, there you go.
I think we kind of do.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's what it looks like. I would love to see Casey Schmitt come back. And look, the other thing that's really good about Casey Schmitt, to wrap Album Depot's point as a prospect, is defensively, he's a stalwart, but he's blocked, right? He's blocked with who the Giants just signed to be their starting third baseman over the next few years. Can Casey Schmitt move to second? He probably could.
Yeah.
Could he hit enough to stay there? Who knows? Could he and Fitzgerald kind of man the position? I could see that. I could see Casey Schmitt being on the team as a backup outfielder. Backup infielder. He can play multiple positions.
Sure. And that's the thing too, is, but do you want to waste that talent? I mean, because when you move him to shortstop, you lose Gold Glove caliber. I mean, he's a Gold Glove caliber third baseman. But when you put him at shortstop, he's good, but I don't think he's, is he better than Haesung Kim? I don't think so. And then with Haesung Kim, you're getting, you know, a bat that can hit 260 as well, has some pop, can steal some bases. I mean, you're getting a much better player in Haesung Kim than you're getting in Casey Schmitt. Casey Schmitt would be, man, if we start the season with Tyler Fitzgerald at second and Casey Schmitt at shortstop and Chapman at third, something went wrong.
Yeah, something went wrong.
I can tell you that much. Something went wrong.
But Buster Posey starts his opening season press conference by saying, what had happened was, you see.
guys,
so Rap Album Depot wishes we were a call-in show, because he said he called in KMBR last night. You know, I called in KMBR, I think I was 14 years old the first time I called KMBR.
Heck yeah.
I don't remember. I think it was Kruko. I think I called up Kruko to tell him that Robbie Thompson was my favorite baseball player.
And
Kruko said,
he was like, what?
No, Kruko goes, me too. And so I was like, oh, Kruko's,
oh, there you
guy.
Go.
Kruko's okay. My guy forever. He's my guy forever.
There you go.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the playoffs right now. So, you know, Fernando Tatis, you let me down.
Yeah.
Grounding into double plays with runners on and deciding games. What the heck's going on here? So, you know, the Padres were hot and they were doing a lot of chirping. Dodger Stadium was very upset at them. And then you can't go out and just go so quietly in the night in the last two games.
Right.
They had one job. They literally had one job, which is to get the Dodgers out of there. And they had the Dodgers down 2-1. And then they just laid down and they couldn't do anything, which is frustrating. But, you know, Dodgers do have a lot of talent. I'm just so surprised that the Dodgers bullpen was just able to be fire. Like, where did that come from? Not, I mean, they have great arms, but being able to dominate the postseason mostly with your bullpen, that was pretty amazing.
I think what it is the postseason. So everything that everybody predicts going into the postseason, you throw it out the window. Because what did everybody say? Us and the experts all said, what are you going to do with The Dodgers pitching staff. They don't have a pitching staff. That's the one thing. They're going to have to win games 9-8, and they have the offense to be able to do that. And here they go setting a record for scoreless innings in a playoff. So the opposite is going to happen of what's going to happen. I mean, Philadelphia Phillies, we thought were going to be the juggernaut. It was going to be the Phillies and the Yankees, and that whole thing blew up as well. So the playoffs are a different animal.
I was very into the idea of the Padres just coming in, beating the Dodgers, and then just running the table. But then I just remembered, like, look, you know, when you have the type of players that are so emotional and they're based on emotion and that's where they get their energy from, they also can be the most quiet team at the same time when they're not playing well. So it didn't surprise me that the Dodgers came back. I was just very hopeful. Now the Mets are sort of the story of the postseason. They came all the way back in that wild card round to kind of shock baseball in the ninth inning there at the end. And they're kind of the feel good story, but does the feel good story beat the Dodgers in a 7-game series? I'm not sure about that.
I mean, there's got to be a lot of magic, right? I mean, and again, you don't, we've seen it year after year, you don't have to be great to win a World Series. You've got to be really good. You got to have some luck. You have to have some things go your way. And that's just kind of the way it is if you're going to win a World Championship. Especially in baseball, because you've got a best of 7 series. You've got a best of 3. You've got a best 2 out of 3 series to open the playoffs. And then you got a 3 out of 5. And then you got a 4 out of 7. You're not if you're going to win that many games and then go to the World Series and then win 4 out of 7, you're not winning every one of those games because you're great. Something goes your way in those games. I mean, talent-wise, yes, the Dodgers outclass the Mets, but then you get a Mark Vientos, and then you get you get the bit players, you know, Starling Marte with one leg. I don't even know if he has one leg at this point. but you get a guy like that who's going to come up with big hits and make a play in the outfield, and you're like, this guy can't even run. How did he make that play? Things unexpectedly happen. Would you make any changes to the format right now?
I will tell you, I hate that wild card round. Not from the perspective of watching. Like, it's very exciting. Yeah. It creates excitement like right away. And I was actually talking to Jared about this, which is they've kind of turned it into March Madness a little bit in that first round because of the variable of those three games, the variableness, whatever. I don't know if that's a word, but
now it is.
it just gives, like, if you are the Detroit Tigers, right, it gives you the faith that you can actually do this. But if you are the team who, you know, maybe didn't quite win 100 games but maybe won 96 games, you're a little scared going into that first round just because of the possibility of a ball foul here or a ball fair here can actually determine your faith after 162 games. Because that was always a thing when we were kids, was the reason why we were okay with, you know, the way that the playoffs were, which is you win your division and then you just automatically play in the NLCS or the ALCS, because the 162 games was supposed to stick. That was supposed to be
right.
All of it. Like, okay, you earned your spot. They've gone all the way on the other side now with 3 wild cards in each league. The variability in what could happen out there, man, you know, we saw it in 2021, right? Like, the Giants won 107 games and they were done after 3.
It was
hasta la vista.
It's way better than the one game, though. Yes. For sure, right? Yeah. I mean, it's way better than the one game wild card. Although with the one game wild card, you manage differently. In a 2 out of 3, when you're at home, you manage one way. When you're on the road in a one game do or die, you manage a completely different way. So, you know, there's pros and cons to the one game. There's pros and cons to the two out of three, but it's tough. I mean, you got to go on the road and you have to win a series in a playoff atmosphere on the road. You got to play all three games. If you
that's
get that
the
many
crazy part
on the road. So that
when,
that's
what, when did I that? Like. So, okay. So the giant, when the Giants and Dodgers played in 2021,
there wasn't that wild card.
Right. So right. they just so that, had the, it was odd. It was what they went right into the divisional.
So
playoffs.
Yeah. So it was the NLDS. So last year or 2 years ago, 2022 is when they first started the on the road. You got to win two out of three. All three games are on the road, which again, I like the format. I mean, it's, you know, hey, Houston blew it. You know, the teams that were at home, they blew it. That,
yeah.
That's just what happens. You can't totally do anything about that. And then the Mets, again, they go and face the Phillies and they beat them in a 3 out of 5 series. I mean, again, a little bit of ball bouncing your way here and there, but in terms of complete team and believing in yourself, hey man, if you don't believe in yourself and you don't have a cohesive team in the playoffs, I don't know what to tell you. You're probably going to get beat. And so I don't personally see how you can make any changes to this format. You know, they're going to add more teams. That's unfortunately what's going to happen. The only thing I would say, but again, this would drag this thing out to November again, which is what they're trying to avoid. But hey, you want to change things up, make that first series a 3 out of 5, but then you're adding travel and
yeah.
everything else, or may hell make it 3 out of 5 of the home ballpark. But then that's a lot of games to have to play in one ballpark. So,
if they added two more teams, they'd get to 32 teams. Would they go what, 4 divisions, 4 teams in each division?
You're making me do math.
Well, that's yeah, 66 that in yeah. each league.
Yeah.
So that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be really interesting because then who do you take out of the West?
I
guess the farthest East team would be Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be Colorado. So you'd have to take them out, which I wouldn't be sad about because I don't like when we have to go to Colorado in the middle of July.
Yeah.
Right after the All-Star break and we lose 3 out of 4.
Though they were very nice to us this year. I will say that.
They were at one point.
So what do you think? Dodgers, Yankees? You're an old school Guardians fan from back in the day.
I am. I'm watching the game right now as we're doing this, and you know, they're putting up a fight. They got runners on second and third, and they're down 3-1. I didn't see what inning it is. I think we're probably in the 5th or 6th. But yeah, the Yankees are a tough team to beat, man. They really are. They got pitching. They got hitting.
Which thing about Rodon opening up the series yesterday?
I mean, that's just and again when you have that 3 out of 5 before that, you got to the chips fall where they fall. You gotta pitch who you gotta pitch, mm-hmm. and that's kind of what I like about having instead of the single game in the wild card, you get best 2 out of 3. Now you're relying on a complete pitching staff because mm-hmm. we always talk about, hey, if the Giants can get in that yeah. first round of the playoffs, 2 out of 3, the Giants got 3 aces you got to go against. Well, I mean, Robbie Ray never got healthy again, but you got the 3 aces. But then after that, what do you do? Now all of a sudden you're like, well, we got to get back to those aces, but now we're in a 3 out of 5 and we can't lose the first 2 or else we're kind of screwed. So, I hate to even say it, man, but I think it's going to be Yankees and Dodgers. 1981 rematch, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There was a 30 for 30 on ESPN that was about Yankees versus Dodgers from the 80s, from the early 80s, late 70s, yeah, early 80s.
I think 81 was the season, but it was also the strike shortened season. Mm-hmm. So that was, the lockout shortened season. So the Dodgers have won a lockout shortened season. Then in 88, they had a World Series, legit. Then in 2020, they had a blah. whatever that was.
Are you talking about, they get very defensive when you call it this, the Mickey Mouse World Series?
100%. That's what I'm talking about. I work with a Dodger fan and I tell him that all the time.
My buddy was so mad.
He actually gets it. He's like, yeah, no, I get it.
No, my buddy was so mad because the Giants were so passive aggressive when the Dodgers came to town and they gave away that Mickey Mouse related item.
Yes.
And he's like, you know why they did that? And I was like, no, why? I don't know. I don't understand. He's like,
no, explain it to me.
He's like, because of the 2020 title. I was like, oh, the Mickey Mouse title.
You should have told him, hey, nobody else put that together, man.
We'll end on this, which is, if you were a baseball fan, now take the Giants piece out of this. If you were no relation to the Dodgers, Yankees, you're just a baseball fan. Maybe you remember when Rob Lowe wore the hat and it was the NFL logo and like no team. You're Rob Lowe, but you're a baseball
I'm Rob Lowe.
Fan.
I have an MLB hat on. I do have an MLB on Fox hat because I pulled cable and candlestick one.
No way. Out. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's Rob Lowe. I did that. Fox hat.
I did that for San Jose State and Air Force back in the day.
Yes, and I did the play-by-play up in the booth for that. That was the Sunday Nighter, right?
I also held the boom mic. You can see me in the end zone. I'm like holding it.
I think we had another guy from our department who had the orange gloves on the time.
Do you remember? Now we're going off a tangent. Who was the woman who was the ESPN anchor who came to talk to us? Like, what was her name? Pat or something?
See, you were journalism, so I didn't get her.
Oh, you didn't?
No. I was radio, television, film production, so we didn't get. We got the old guy smoking a cigarette saying, here's how you lay a cable. No, we didn't.
Well, no, we did. We did all of that, too.
Yeah.
But there was a... there was a moment where when we were doing all that, when we were getting the whole stadium ready for the event, because it was a giant event, because we just didn't we didn't get that at San Jose State. We never got the ESPN game necessarily. Now today, all the San Jose State games are on like True TV or whatever. So
Fox,
they're getting that whole thing.
FS1.
They're getting that whole thing ready. I'm trying to find this woman's name.
Leslie Visser? No.
No, it wasn't Leslie. It was it Pam?
Linda Cohn?
Pam. No, I wish it was Linda Cohn.
Yeah.
I was 21 back then. I really wish it was Linda Cohn back then. Like, oh, Linda Cohn is on campus, baby.
Yeah.
I forget her name. I remember, I'll mention it next time. But basically, she was basically saying, everyone thinks that this job is, this like fancy job. She's like, this job is hard. Like, do you know how hard we work to do SportsCenter? It's like chaos and you have to be on point. And so, all of us at that point, whether you're in RTVF or whether you're in the journalism side, like ESPN was kind of a cool place where like, oh, if I worked at ESPN, then, I'm using my degree to the fullest. And you actually got to work at a cool place when Yahoo did their sports and Yahoo News and all that stuff. But I just remember her going like, it's not all what you guys think it is. Like, we work our asses off for not a lot of money. And I was like, okay. I think I may have to detour this other thing.
I should get a business degree.
Okay. Sorry for that tangent, but okay. You're Rob Lowe, the baseball fan.
Okay.
You rather see Yankees and Dodgers or Yankees and Mets? I'm not adding the Guardians because the Guardians aren't like this, they aren't that big market team. They're a good baseball team, but they don't have the stars that the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Mets have.
Yeah. So I guarantee you Fox is absolutely 100% salivating for Dodgers Yankees.
At 100%.
100%. Yankees Mets, great story, but Yankees Mets does not have Ohtani, does not have Mookie Betts, it doesn't have East Coast versus West Coast, it doesn't have the team that came from New York that went to the West Coast. the storyline for Yankees Dodgers is huge, right?
Yes.
I mean that's the big story. I said Yankees Dodgers, right?
Yes.
That's the one that they're salivating for. Yankees again, Yankees Mets, good story. New York versus New York, you know, all of New York will be, oh, this and that. You know, people who aren't baseball fans are going to throw on their Mets hat or the Yankees hat and they're going to choose a side. But when you're talking Hollywood versus Manhattan, or, you know, the Bronx, you're talking, you know, I just said Manhattan and the Bronx. I don't New York people are probably like, the hell are you talking about? But yeah, I think that's the one. That's what baseball wants. Baseball wants Dodgers, Yankees.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's the right one, as painful as it is for me to say that. You know, by the way, my favorite ESPN anchor, SportsCenter anchor of all time, I think I'd go Gail Gardner first. Do you remember Gail Gardner from the early days? Red hair?
I think I do, yes.
She would be number one, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
She was I think she was the only woman on ESPN for like the longest time.
My favorite one, and she was really cool. She used to do, oh God, like the afternoon show. It was like noon our time. And it was her and Robert Flores.
Oh, Roflo.
Roflo doing the noon-ish show. So probably 3 o'clock their time. But now she does tennis. I can't remember her name. Blonde. Like that's going to help. I got to look it up real quick here. Chris McKendry.
Oh, yeah. Didn't she really get fired?
I think so, but I liked her style. I liked her delivery. I liked her dryness. I thought she did a really good job with the sport.
Oh, no, she didn't get fired. I was thinking of someone different.
Yeah, and she really made it enjoyable. But yeah, now she does tennis, like Wimbledon. She does all the big tennis tournaments. So, yeah.
All right, we rambled long enough about stuff that's not related to the Giants, but yeah. So Rod and I will be back on Sunday. Brian and I should be back on Thursday to do a little bit of Warriors preview as the NBA starts again next week, and the WNBA playoffs. These finals are 1-1, so New York and Minnesota. So that'll possibly be wrapped. Actually, no, it won't be wrapped by the time Brian and I record. I think that it'll be pre-game four. So we'll talk about some WNBA, the WNBA team in the Bay Area, the Valkyries. They got a new coach, and she is Japanese. So she's the first Asian-American WNBA head coach in the history of the league. So that is cool. We'll talk a lot about all of that on Thursday. Rod and I back on Sunday. We want winners after 49ers and the Chiefs. And the Chiefs are the absolute thorn in our side. We cannot get past these dudes. So I'm very hopeful, but I'm not necessarily positive about that game. Can you be hopeful, but not like confident? Because that's what I am.
I need Mahomes to finally have a big game. I'll play Robert Portnoy this week. I need something from Mahomes this season that's more than 10 freaking points
out. Yeah.
Anyways, that's my interest.
Mahomes, like, he's like, oh, I'm gonna throw this one to the running back, I'm gonna throw this 5-yard pass. But you know, last week I guess Juju, you got Juju going.
Yeah.
I picked up Juju in our league for previous week, and he went.
Oh, 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Because Mahomes was on a bye.
He was on a bye.
I had to start Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones.
All right, we're done here. We'll be back next Monday instead of Tuesday. So for Brad, I'm Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
Peace.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for.
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value Surge, truck's up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.